Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I think things have settled down with the weather just a little bit in the immediate metro, right, Sue?
That is correct.
Wow, it was that was quite a storm that came through. Tornado sirens going off. Ethan was showing me some video of a tornado that certainly seemed like it was touching down in Potosi. So we'll have to see if there's any damage from that, but we'll keep you posted. But the good news is Dave Murray said a lot of this, at least in the immediate metro, is going to move out by 6 o'clock. If you're heading down to the southwest part of Missouri or down to Arkansas or anything like that, it is a completely different story. So we aired a lot of this earlier today from President Trump.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day. Waiting for a long time. April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again.
And so he outlined these reciprocal tariffs.
The tariffs will be not a full reciprocal. I could have done that, yes, but it would have been tough for a lot of countries who didn't want to do that.
Brian Kilmeade is back with us this afternoon for his weekly visit. How are you, Brian, this afternoon?
How's it going, Mark? Don't ask me how I think this is going to turn out. I really don't know.
I don't either.
And so yeah. I'm not going to pretend that, well, finally, what this reminds me of, or we knew it was coming because he said it over and over again. You know, so we can't say, well, where did this come from? No, we know. Just like we knew with Doge. Oh, you might not like it. We knew it was coming. He said it. You know, we listened to when it was pitched to him, and he said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to lean out government. I'm going to make it more efficient. Okay, you don't like it, but he said it. And today he said it. He just had to pick the date, and it was April 2nd today. Now, I'm watching other channels, and I think it's cataclysmic. They think it's crazy. Nobody yeah. says anything balanced. If I read the New York Times today, they pointed out the areas that are egregious, where we are thoroughly unbalanced. They point out more areas in which we are somewhat balanced. But I want to see the reaction tomorrow, not just by the market, by the other countries. So are they going to get mad and they're going to just go, okay, no, we're hitting you back? Or are they going to go, okay, let's see what you're doing here. Let's work out a deal. Or I want to, you know, do what Israel and Vietnam and India seems to have done with certain products.
Because the president has good relationships with some of these leaders. He mentioned the leader of Japan, Shinzo, the prime minister of India. They're relatively close as well. So I think you're right. And I'm kind of taking the same tack just because some of this is so complicated. And by the way, for the record, the experts tend to predict things that are never accurate. So I think a lot of this that they're doing in this administration is going to take a little time just to see how it works out.
I mean, to me, the economists, you know, we're big sports guys. And we always watch these guys do the draft or make predictions on can't-miss draft picks. And we see them losing. You think, how do they get paid every year? You know, they go to the combines and they miss all the time. But economists miss even worse. So they're all certain that they're right, which is so interesting. So I watch a little good the guys with the PhDs, and they say all this. And I like guys that are practically – I kind of like the mix. It's got Bessin, who's been in the upper – you know, a big-time investor, and I got Howard Lutnick, more of a gritty guy. You know, they combined different skill sets, good trade representative. So I'm very curious to see how that's going to happen. The Republicans are curious, too. I don't see any of them going out there, and they're a lot of them like, hey, I just believe in Trump, but I really don't know about this.
Yeah, Senator Schmidt put a string on the ex formerly Twitter today. It was pretty, you know, full of endorsements for this. But I do think we're going to take a little time, you know, to figure some of it out. Let me kind of go to something else, though, because Sue and I were talking about this, Brian. You know, a week ago, Brett had that great sit down with the Doge team. And one of the things, Sue, you even brought this up. It would be great, not that the Fox audience isn't large, and we know it's large, but if people would hear that conversation instead of the filter they're getting through the legacy media about what they're actually trying to do, I think it would be helpful for everyone. Those were great moments that Brett Baer had with that whole team last week.
And if you are listening now and don't know what we're talking about, if you go to Fox Nation, they put the whole hour, two-hour interview on. So just picture three billionaires, by the way, not counting Musk, very successful people who went into Office and Personal Management, went into Social Security, went into Medicare, went into now the Pentagon, and they walked over even to the CIA on organizational charts, not money. And they're just saying that these systems are dated 50 years ago, and to update these systems, you have to pay hundreds of millions of dollars because only few people know how to use them. And these guys are coming in, and go, listen, I can fix this. This is my service to the country. I can fix it. And it's so they think this stuff is so rudimentary that gets them excited. There's so many easy fixes, so they're going in there and they're fixing. They say the people that are really dedicated, who love that we're there. The people that don't want to really work do not want them there.
Right. Go figure. Right? Yeah, that's interesting. Look, I think it's going to be fascinating to see what they can actually accomplish. But here's the other thing. Politico's reporting this today. It looks like this whole thing with Elon being in charge of this might come to an end sooner rather than later. Are you hearing that, too, or sensing that reporting might be accurate?
I called over to the White House, and they threw Catherine Levitt said, absolutely not true. Okay. Nothing has changed. And Carolyn Levitt, I should say. And then she said, add this. He never was going to stay more than when Doge is done. So they kept saying over and over again, until this is done, 130 days. If there's another project to pick up, you do it. But now everyone's asking him to come over to their department now. So like transportation, in the beginning he was there and the secretaries weren't even there yet. And they were a little offended. They were like, listen, can I take control of my own department first? And now they're like, wait, before you go, could you organize us? You know, Homeland, can you organize us? You know, can you get us? Can you find out where the inefficiencies are? So it's not just about money. So I think, number one, they have to learn from the Wisconsin. It's closer to you. They have to learn from the Wisconsin election. If you just come in like a bulldog and just say, here's the money and I'll give you $1 million if you go canvass and vote Republican, people don't like that. Musk has made himself a target. He doesn't care. He's got his eye on the big picture. But I do think that he is a heat shield for the president. So I think a lot of the stuff that the president normally would be getting, they're giving on Musk. So the president is not nearly as upset as you guys think he is, not you, but as people think he is, because Trump's like, man, they're going at him pretty hard. And he could sit there almost like a conductor in the orchestra and go at Waltz, you know, go at Musk. Now yesterday was Lutnick's got to go. Okay, you know, instead of like Trump's cheating, Trump doesn't belong in the White House. The Russians put him there. We're suing him. He's not really rich. He's a groper. Now all of a sudden it's Tesla not that good. Let's blow up the car. And Lutnick is too abrasive, too many dumb ideas. And Waltz is using Google Maps.
Yeah, Gmail, right? I saw that story today. Google. Right.
Yeah, so, and Trump is like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
not bad,
exactly. You know? Hey, you talked about Wisconsin. I've not addressed this because we aired much of the ceremony in the 3 o'clock hour, and we did some stuff in the last hour that was different. But I did want to talk about that just a little bit because I know the state well, and I talked to some peeps up there. Look, here's the biggest problem, I think, moving forward, is that there were 680,000 fewer voters on the Republican side for Brad Schimmel than for Trump. So we know that people come out for Trump, but a lot of those people that come out for Trump only come out for Trump. There were essentially 1 million ballots fewer than in November, Brian, in that. So 250,000 less for the Democrats and then 680,000 fewer ballots for the Republican. That makes a big difference. You have a lot of white women in Wisconsin that tend to vote on the Democrat side. You know, look, the state is not a purple state. It's a blue state, but Trump's been able to, you know, power through that. And he did it in 2016. really due to the demise of Hillary Clinton and her voters didn't come out. But so I don't know if there's a broad interpretation of what happened in Wisconsin, because I think it's a little bit more nuanced, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you know, especially because a judgeship, I mean, it gets no attention unless you tell me it's gerrymandering going to flip the House. So that's really what happened. Listen, you dove into this heavily than me. When I saw the two Florida seats go, I thought to myself, I can go to bed now.
Right.
And then, you know, and then I saw how it wasn't even close when I got up in the morning for Wisconsin. So I go, okay, that's the story. So you dove into this a little bit more. It wasn't even close.
No. It was a 10-point victory. Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought to myself, okay, I could. So you dove into this. But I would say this. Don't overread the midterms, number one. And don't overread Florida. They look at how much money they poured in. And nobody knows these guys. What the people are forgetting is that Matt Gaetz is familiar to that area. They like him. And Mike Waltz is familiar. He didn't open up. His first election wasn't a 30-point win. His third election was. So people are like, well, he only won by 18 or 12. I'm like, okay. No one even knew who Randy Fine was. So, and obviously he didn't, and personally, I don't think he worked hard. He's still got an easy election. So they got a 7-seat margin, 5-7-seat margin. It's hard to know when these people get sick or there's special elections. I'm not sure what's going on, but so that helps in the House. Let's see them pass something. And listen, I think it's going to be fascinating. Tomorrow's show is going to be absolutely fascinating, and so is Friday, because I don't really know how the market's going to react. I find the whole thing fascinating, because a lot of experts have never been down this road before either.
No, I'm going to watch it. I think we're all going to watch it closely. The market, by the way, was up today. Do you have anything set for the Sunday night show yet?
Yeah. I'm going to open up with you, Hewitt. I'm going to add in the senator from Pennsylvania that just got the job. He has got a brand-new book out, and he's going to be joining me. We also have Tommy Lahren's going to be joining me through the media segment, and
see, it's unfair for me to do this on a Wednesday. That's part of the issue.
No. John Chris is going to be joining me too.
Let me talk about Hugh real quick, because I noticed yesterday, and I talked to Sean Spicer yesterday, and he's read half of this book, Fight. And obviously, you have all these reporters that, lo and behold, all of a sudden didn't want to cover this guy when he was drooling in the White House that are writing books about that. That might be another topic. But I have heard there's some interesting things in this. And Hugh, in particular, said that it's definitely worth reading. So have you gotten a chance to look at that book at all, Brian, yet?
No, but you know what I'm reading? Putin's Brain. This guy, Alexander. He has just written a book. He's you know, Karl Rove, they always say he was Bush's brain.
Yeah.
So his aide wrote a book, and it's about Trump and the world, how the world views Trump. And I'm going to be talking to. I asked for another week just to finish the book, so that's been my focus. But for what you're saying with this situation, it angers me so much. But I was saying that. In the Russians called him a. Everybody knows he has in Russian. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows Joe Biden has dementia. So, and America has never been more vulnerable and is never run by their presidents. So, just think about this: we watch this guy doddering around, can't finish a sentence. Then we watch, you know, Scarborough come back and said this is the best version of Joe Biden ever. And we watch Senator Chris Coons go and he's a great guy. I've known him my whole life, and we're actually having a debate about this. And then how dare you comment? But around the world, there's no debate. This guy was not in charge. So if you had some guts, you would have written this book while he was still in office.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens with a lot of them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Unfortunately. So. All right, Brian Kilmeade. Well, listen, you have a great rest of your week. We'll see you on Sunday night. We'll talk next week.
All right, go get him, Mark.
Thank you very much. Our weekly visit with Mr. Kilmeade. You hear him every morning here on 97.1 FM Talk. I want to talk a little bit about what happened in California. We're trying to do a little catch-up today, Sue, just because the first hour was taken up by the tariff event at the White House. But this is, you know, typical for California. But they have voted to not change any state policies allowing transgender kids and teens to play on sports teams consistent with their gender identity. So in other words, in California, they still think it's cool, even though you know, the governor, and it would have been interesting to see if this passed, what the governor would have done, right? The governor all of a sudden is like, yeah, you know, that seems pretty unfair to have a biological man with a penis competing against young women. But they had a big heated debate about this. Listen to this. This is a young woman, Taylor Starling. I don't know, you know, I didn't watch all this, Sue, but I'd love to know what some of these wacko Dems that think that this is perfectly fine and fair. What do they think about a girl like this?
I was removed from my varsity girls team and replaced by a newly eligible male transfer student who received favorable treatment. As a result of this unfair treatment, my teammate Caitlin and I wore shirts that said Save Girls Sports and stated that boys and girls are different. It's common sense. XX does not equal XY. Our athletic director made me remove my shirt and told me it was like wearing a swastika.
Oh my God.
In front of a Jewish person. And said that I would face disciplinary action if I wore it again. My Title IX and free speech rights as a female matter too.
That is disgusting.
That is.
Can you even believe that? She went on Fox. She talked about this a little bit more.
I was told that transgender athletes are a protected class and that women are not. So that they have more rights than women, which is insane. It's crazy to me. Like, yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can say about this, having talked about it now for probably 10 years, is the tide has turned. I mean, California, they're off on their own planet. 90% of people in this country, including 70% of Democrats, think this is ludicrous. But these progressive lawmakers in Sacramento, in Albany, in all these, in Springfield, Illinois, this is one of the reasons I enjoy living in Missouri, because we don't have to put up with this crap that they have to put up with in the rest of the country. It's a bunch of, almost said a bad word, it is a bunch of BS. But listen to this, Matt Walsh, who's just brilliant. He did that movie, What is a Woman? If you haven't seen it, you can stream it online. You may have to pay for it a little bit, but he testified yesterday.
Today, I'm not going to talk about fairness, although it's certainly true that allowing men to compete in women's sports is deeply unfair. And I'm not going to talk about safety, although it's certainly true that allowing men into female sports teams and into their bathrooms is incredibly unsafe. I'll let others highlight those important points. I want to talk about something even more important and even more basic. It's the most basic thing of all. It's truth. You must keep men out of women's sports and out of their facilities for the simple reason that they are men. Men are not women. A man who claims he is a woman is still not a woman. So why shouldn't men play in women's sports? Because they aren't women. It isn't true. We should not allow men into women's sports for the same reason we shouldn't go around claiming that 2 + 2 = 7. It's just not true. It is a lie.
So this goes back to what Riley Gaines told me, because when I asked her, Riley, how is it possible that they cannot admit that this is a fairness issue? And her answer was kind of along the lines of what Matt said. They can't, because if they do that, then they admit that that person is not a woman. And
the whole thing crumbles.
Right. The whole thing falls down, because you're a woman if you say you're a woman, right? Ketanji Brown Jackson, a member of the United States Supreme Court, could not define what a woman was during her confirmation hearings. That's outrageous.
Yeah.
You know, and most of America doesn't know that, because people listening right now, you know that because you've heard the soundbite. I opened the show with it. But overwhelming majority of Americans who, by the way, are on our side of this issue, they don't know that. If they did, they'd laugh their asses off. They'd think it was ridiculous. A little bit more here with Matt Walsh.
The man who identifies as a woman is either deluded and confused, or he is a cross-dressing fetishist looking to play out his fantasies in public. In either case, the claim that he's making, the claim to womanhood, is not true. And compelling women to take part in this untruth is evil, perverse, and predatory. If you would use the force of law to compel young girls to use a changing room with a boy, you are yourselves predators. Transgenderism is a lie. It is, in fact, the most deranged lie that mankind has ever invented. In a free country, nobody should ever be forced to participate in a lie. As lawmakers, you have an obligation to the truth. It is a truth that I know you all recognize, because every human who has ever lived on Earth recognizes it, that men are men and women are women. It is that simple. And the question before you is just as simple. The question is this: will you side with the truth, a truth so basic that every toddler understands it, or will you disgrace yourselves by denying it? That is your choice to make.
They disgrace themselves. They disgrace themselves as they always do in California. And these were very simple bills. One would have required the California Interscholastic Federation, that's the governing body for, you know, high school sports. We have MISHA here in Missouri, to adopt rules banning students whose sex was assigned male at birth from participating on a girls' sports team. Pretty simple, right? The other would have reversed a 2013 law allowing students to participate in sex-segregated school programs, including on sports teams, and use bathrooms and other facilities that align with their gender identity, and that would have applied to K through 12 college students. I don't know Matt Walsh, but I bet Matt Walsh would kind of agree with me. If you want to, you know, cut your penis off, you want to cut your boobs off, you want to do whatever you want when you're an adult, do it. We don't care, no. Right? We kind of care when you're doing all your nonsense drag show grooming at Pride Fest and all that. We don't really care. If you want to do that with your peeps, go for it. Again, we don't care. We're not into the Alphabet Mafia stuff, but we don't want this happening to kids, and we don't want our young women, children who are athletes like my daughter to be affected like this. And again, I've said this before. I'll go to that little girl that we just played the soundbite from, Taylor Starling. I don't care if she's the only person that happened to, where someone accused her
right.
of being tantamount to a Nazi swastika because she wore XXXY. That's utterly ridiculous. And by the way, Jen Say from XXXY Athletics, who has highlighted a lot of this and is on kind of Team Riley Gaines, is going to be with us tomorrow on the show. Looking forward to that. Well, Fred has handed me a sheet with all of the guests for tomorrow. We have Andrew Hale from Heritage to run down some of the tariff stuff that we heard earlier this afternoon. George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet. We're going to talk about some stuff going on in the tech world and hacking and things along those lines. Jennifer Say, I mentioned her. She's coming up. And then our friend Dwayne Patterson, who writes at hotair.com. And he has the Dwayne's World podcast, so weigh in on all the politics, plus an audio cut of the day as well. Earlier today, I saw this tweet. I retweeted it because I was very confused. This is from KMOV, our CBS television affiliate here in St. Louis. The story said this. The St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department said the crime rate is the lowest in more than 20 years. My response to that was, hey, April Fool's Day was yesterday. I'm not exactly sure how that got out there, but give me a break. There are things that strain credibility, and that certainly is one of them. When you vote next Wednesday or Tuesday, no, vote on Wednesday, that's after the election. When you vote next Tuesday, maybe you already have, but there's early voting. In St. Louis County, we have Proposition B. We've talked about this a little bit. We talked about it on the roundtable last week. We had Dennis Hancock, who is my county councilman, on. He supports it. It would give the county council open-ended authority to fire department heads that are appointed by the county executive. And they would have to do it, though, with 5 of 7 votes on the council. So I've admitted that I have some mixed feelings on this particular, you know, piece of legislation, or I guess it's a referendum at this point. And not everyone supports it. But then again, now you have the folks at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. See, they editorialized about this, and they were against it. So that kind of makes me want to be for it. Here's Shalonda Webb on the county council.
The city of Delwood has this. The city of Ferguson has this provision. The city of Belknap has this provision. The city of Chesterfield.
Including the city of Florissant, a part that I represent, the largest city in St. Louis County.
Yeah, so the case that they're making, Jane made this case last week. Look, a lot of these municipalities already have this. There's a high threshold. It's 5 of 7. I have with us tonight on the phone James Knowles, who is the former mayor of Ferguson. He reached out last week. He's not a big fan of this. James, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks.
I'm all for a different perspective, as you know, and this is one I have some mixed feelings on. I really kind of understand the points on both sides, which that's wishy-washy, I know, but I'm just being honest there. So what is your issue with this on the other side, if you will?
Well, I would agree that there's definitely merits on both sides. Shalonda is a friend of mine, and so is her husband Steve. I love them both. She was wrong to say that the city of Ferguson has this because it absolutely does not have that power in their charter.
Right.
In fact, most cities don't. I've been a city councilman. I've been a mayor. I've also been a city administrator. The fact of the matter is that I think what you're having here is, you know, unnecessary legislative encroachment into the executive branch. Now, I think many of us have had issues with the executive branch. I've served as a mayor and council member under 3 different county executives, worked very closely with all 3. I we could have a whole other story about the highs and lows of Charlie, Steve, and Sam.
Oh, but I bet we could. That's like a Netflix series, I think, James.
I think it is. That's a multi-part episode. So the reality is, though, you know, we're talking about changing the charter for what's been going wrong with one individual person. Years ago, when I was a young, you know, political activist working, helping the Republicans take control of the county councils, you know, Kurt Odenwald was the county council chairman for the time that the Republicans had it. You know, there was obviously battling back and forth with him and Charlie. The reality is, you know, we haven't had the Republicans haven't had the county council in years, probably never will again, at least the way the districts are drawn. I think we're trying to solve a problem about a relationship that's currently existing between the legislative branch and the county executive. The legislative branch has the ability to, you know, and have investigations demand information, you know, require, you know, these people to produce information. If they're not, you know, then it kind of becomes a legal issue. I do like the idea of them firing the county counselor, but, you know, getting down to the point of firing the Parks and Rec director or the street superintendent or whatever because of, you know, we don't like the job they're doing, I think that really creates a problem. You know, we wouldn't want that happening to President Trump.
And
right?
I think I made that point last week on the roundtable. Look, you know, this happens in Washington. You get to pick your members, and then the president has to fire them. In this case, though, what Jane and some of the others would say, look, we had a situation like with this health director that really wasn't a health director. There's been other things, an auditor that really wasn't an auditor. So you have King Page in that position, or whoever might be county executive, completely unwilling to make any changes, even when members of his own party are encouraging him on the council to do that. So they sit back and say, look, we get 5 of 7 to me, James, seems like a pretty high threshold. I get your points. I really do. And I don't like carving out an exemption or something specifically just because of one leader. And it does seem like that's what's happening with Sam. But it also seems like the threshold is relatively high.
Well, 5 of 7 legislators could change laws in the county to require these things to be done by the county executive, hence the, you know, the requirements that would be necessary to hire a county auditor or the health department director if they don't have the qualifications. Those things can all be set by ordinance, and they could override Sam with those 7 votes that they currently have. But I look at it right now. I mean, let's hope that the election comes up. Maybe the Republicans put up somebody this time, or maybe the county gets a clue and they decide to go nonpartisan, because that's really where we probably should be having this conversation.
Right.
But, you know, now, you know, Bill Corrigan would have won, if he would have won last time around, and the Democrats would be just railing on him. And it's 7 members, 5 to 2, the 2 Republicans and 5 Democrats. And they just decide to micromanage Bill Corrigan because it's politics. If he would have won, well, what is that, like 16 years ago now, aging myself here.
Well, dude, I remember it well. I was in the war room that night with him, and it was close. It was close until those votes came in from North County, right?
Yeah, right, unfortunately. I was down there at Grant's, whatever that place was called, where they were at. So
yeah, was that place that was right by the Grant's Trail, right? That's where we were.
Grant's Trail, yeah. It's that lodge there.
Right,
I was there, too. Yeah,
God,
absolutely.
I forgot about that.
So, yeah, that's the last thing I'll remember today. But, you know, that's the thing that you don't want to have happen. I think the problem that we'll see here is this is trying to fix a Band-Aid. It's a Band-Aid on a problem that we have systemically. You know, I think Mark Harder actually had a great proposal last fall to talk about professional administration and professional management in the county. And what I'm concerned about right now is they didn't go that route because there's still some people on the county council that hopes to be county executive themselves, and they don't want to submit that power to a professional administrator. But if we were like Jackson County in Kansas City area, you know, Sam Page would hire a professional to run the county, not just some random guy they got from, Edward Jones to be the quote director of administration. And the county council would have to approve this contract. And the county council could also fire that person if they're not doing their job or, you know, providing the level of professional management and leadership they expect in the county. Mark had he was going down a great road with that before. I know it didn't get enough traction. I think this ended up being the compromise to kind of neuter Sam. But I think it's not going to solve the problem. I think it'll create more problems probably in the future, potentially. I think we need to revisit what the systemic problem is. We need professional management that is both responsive to the council and to the county executive, and not, you know, have politicos be the people that fill a lot of these offices, yeah. Which has been the case for
I understand
50
that
years.
I do understand that point. Do you have, you know, I had an interesting dinner conversation last night that was off the record, but we talked a lot about the city. We talked a lot about the county. We talked about the lack of cooperation. We talked about how Tish is going to get her ass thrown out next week. But will that really make a difference? I'm curious because, look, the city of St. Louis has a lot of challenges. And the advantage for the county is the county's growing. There are economic opportunities. In the city, that just doesn't seem like it's happening, and it's not growing. So how do we ever get on the same page with a guy like Sam Page where the region can have conversations? We're not going to go back to a county-city merger. That, you know, I was in favor of that only because I saw it as an opportunity to change things that needed to be changed. I'm in the position now where I don't see what that possibility might be to fix things here in our region, James.
You know, I think, like I said earlier, the key is going to start by having nonpartisan elections across the board. You know, as long as we keep electing people on a primary basis based on who can win, you know, the core of the party,
right.
Yeah, the core of the party support, and we gerrymander these districts so that they, you know, they're always going to be Republican or Democrat, you're never going to get people that can sit down and find common ground, because that's not popular with the wings of either party.
No.
And St. Louis as a whole, you know, we need to find out what downtown and Chesterfield have in common. And there is something. But right now, it's a lot easier for Chesterfield or whoever to beat up on downtown and vice versa, and, you know, play this us versus them game, and then still claim that we're trying to all come together. It's just not really the case.
Yeah, maybe,
yes.
But you know, look, I'm a huge the us versus them game is kind of real though, just because you see, look, you want to talk about Chesterfield. We talked about Chesterfield last night. You got the factory out there. You have Topgolf, which is making a ton of money. You got a Topgolf on Shoto, a couple miles from here, that is bleeding money. So there are big differences economically, and there's a reason that the city has these challenges. So I get your point, but look, there's some big issues in the city.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, there are a lot of things that Chesterfield is doing right, and we being the city of St. Louis, I don't live there, but obviously the city of St. Louis can't just, you know, make Chesterfield the boogeyman that's stealing all of their people or their businesses or et cetera. And that is part of the
yeah.
problem. And the city can't just, you know, they cannot continue to, you know, follow this very, you know, I hate to say, progressive path that, you know, they don't have any, they're not what they're trying to do, like other cities are doing. It's just not applicable. You know, St. Louis City and County, the relationship we have is very unique. You know, there was only one other arrangement like that in the entire country. And as long as they keep trying to do things, you know, to appease this liberal base or this very progressive base, you're just going to turn off county voters. You're going to turn off West County voters.
Well, then
I know there's a lot of people out there that want to support them.
That makes solutions harder. That's what I'm worried about. By the way, do you know Kara? Do you have a relationship with Kara Spence at all? And thoughts about her?
Yeah, when I was president of the Municipal League in the St. Louis metropolitan region, I had a very good relationship with Kara and with Donna Behringer. Donna was a very good friend of mine. You know, still is, actually. I will say this. You know, I wish them both the best of luck. I can tell you, if people want change, you got to get them both. Just because of the board of, you know, estimate and apportionment.
I think they're going to get them both. I think the numbers are pretty favorable,
I think you might,
right now.
I saw a flyer came out. Somebody texted me this morning that had both of their faces on it. Basically, you know, said the same thing. Hey, you know, you can't just have one, because at the end of the day, if they don't have 2 out of 3 votes on that board, they're not going to get
tough.
The big things done.
James, thank you so much, though, for jumping in here. I got to wrap because I got to get to audio cut of the day, but I appreciate it. You know, I'd love to get – I was just thinking about this, and I'll think out loud. I'd love to have you on the Reardon Roundtable. You know what the problem is? We have too many people on the right and not enough nutty lefties. So if you want to cross over and become a Democrat, I'll get you on the Roundtable probably this Friday. How does that sound?
Well, I can always play both sides.
I know you can. We'll see you soon. Thank you, James Knowles. Audio cut of the day coming up here in just a moment. I mentioned that Fred has us loaded up for tomorrow's show for sure. We're going to talk to Jen Say from XXXY Athletics. get her thoughts on some of the stuff that's going on, including the California bill on the trans stuff. Dwayne Patterson will be here tomorrow as well. I'm short on time, so I think I have to get to this.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
You know, this is one of those days, Sue, where the host did not prepare exceptionally well for choosing the audio cut of the day.
Uh-oh.
But we did have a significant death. Val Kilmer died, and he was pretty young, wasn't he?
65.
65 years old. We know him from a lot of movies, including Batman Forever.
See without seeing. To me, darkness is as clear as daylight.
He was in The Doors, of course, as Jim Morrison.
Above an island in your arms, country in your eyes.
You know, I don't think we mentioned this one earlier, but I always liked Tombstone a lot with Val Kilmer, right?
Oh, yeah.
Why, Johnny Ringo, you look like somebody just walked over your grave.
What an ugly thing to say. Our poor ugliness. Does this mean we're not friends anymore?
But, I mean, you gotta talk about Top Gun.
You guys really are cowboys.
What's your problem, Kazansky?
You're everyone's problem. That's because every time you go up in the air, you're unsafe. I don't like you because you're dangerous.
That's right. Nice, man.
You are still dangerous. You can be my wingman anytime.
And of course, you had the scene in Top Gun Maverick where he had lost his voice. He didn't have the ability to talk, had major health issues. And I mentioned, you know, it was kind of unfortunate that when I pulled the obit up in the LA Times this morning, it only took him about four paragraphs to get to the part where they're reporting on how difficult Val Kilmer was to work with on sets. I mean, he had a different vibe going. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, he kind of withdrew a lot, too. I think some of it because of the illness. He was really into poetry.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
I and I didn't realize it was him singing as Jim Morrison in The Doors.
I don't know if I remember that either. But
I read that this morning and I thought, wow.
Yeah, that makes it, well, it's kind of like the Bob Dylan movie. You still haven't seen that, have
no,
you?
No. Huh?
It's out, you know, it's streaming now. I think it's on Hulu or something like that. Val Kilmer, dead at the age of 65. That's going to wrap things here for a Thursday. Hopefully, we survived the storms. I think we did okay. We had some activity with some tornadoes in Potosi and some other areas. We'll see how the damage is. Hopefully, not too bad. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And as I indicated, I have my whole list here. We started this afternoon on tariffs with President Trump. And we'll have Andrew Hale, who's been on the show before. He's with Heritage. He'll break it down. Christian Toto. You know, Christian's does the website HollywoodandToto.com. He's great on pop culture issues. But here's why we're going to have him on tomorrow, Sue, in the 4 o'clock hour. They're kind of struggling at movie theaters still.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of different ideas to get people into the theaters, some of which are unique, like letting them smoke weed in the theater. But we'll talk to Christian about that. And then Jen Say from XXXY, Dwayne Patterson, in the 5 o'clock hour. Have a great night.
Get more at 971talk.com.